If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The House January 6th committee voted unanimously today to subpoena former President Trump. I would say this is big news, but it's really more like putting one more parking ticket on that van that's been on your block for a year. That ticket ain't getting paid.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with actor Sharon Horgan. But first, a closer look.
The committee investigating the coup attempt on January 6th held what could well be its final investigative hearing today, in which they took the dramatic step of voting to subpoena Donald Trump. They also hinted at possible criminal referrals for key figures involved in the coup and revealed damning new evidence from the Secret Service corroborating key details about the insurrection. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Just minutes before we came out here to tape this show, the committee concluded its hearing with one of its most stunning developments yet. They voted to subpoena Donald Trump himself.
That concludes what may be the committee's final public hearing or meeting, at least before the midterm elections. Their closing argument, if you will, and it ended in dramatic fashion with the committee voting, as you just heard, to subpoena former President Trump to come testify before them.
On this vote, there are 9 ayes and 0 noes.
The resolution is agreed to.
Now, they subpoenaed him, but can you imagine Donald Trump complying with a subpoena from the January 6th committee? Watching him testify before Congress would be insane. He'd go on all sorts of insane rants and attack people. It would be like casting an actual lion in The Lion King. Yeah, it was cool for a second, but then he clawed Rudy Giuliani's face off. It's okay, boss. I don't need a face anyway. I'll just draw on a new one. So, again, this news broke late, guys. Our graphics team. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens with the Trump subpoena, but it was definitely necessary because, as we've said many times before, the reason why it's so important to investigate the last coup attempt is because the next one's already underway. In fact, Trump still reminisces publicly about January 6th as if it was a good thing. Over the weekend, he campaigned in Nevada alongside the GOP candidates for Senate and the governor there, who, it should be noted, both eagerly accepted his endorsement and who were actively touting their support for Trump. And during that rally, Trump compared the size of the crowd at the event to the one that stormed the Capitol on January 6th.
Nobody ever had crowds like we've had. In the history of our country, nobody's ever had crowds. Do you know the biggest crowd I've ever seen? January 6th. And you never hear that. It was the biggest. And they were there. They were there largely to protest a corrupt and rigged and stolen election. It's the biggest crowd, and you never hear that. And you see very few pictures of it, but they're there. That was the biggest crowd I believe I've ever spoken to.
There's never been better proof that Trump isn't watching the January 6th hearings than him saying you see very few pictures of it. Dude, they're showing pictures of it all the time. Also, I know I'm just a talk show host, but can I enter that last video clip of Trump as a piece of evidence? Because I'm pretty sure what we just saw there, that's confession. And sure, I could just point this out to someone who's actually a lawyer, but I would love to be the one to enter the evidence myself in an actual courtroom, because then I could do my Southern lawyer character I've been working on. I'd wear a white suit, and I'd say something like, "Apologies, Congresswoman Cheney, but I do declare this man is guilty, and I have the smoking gun to prove it. I have in my possession a videotape, and I..." At this point, I will pause for scattered gasps. "For this is a videotape of of the defendant's own confession." And then there'd be, you know, rumbling in the crowd, and the judge would bang his gavel and say, "Order in the court." And the defense counsel, they'd be like, "Objection, where did you get that?" And then I would dramatic, there'd be dramatic music, and I would say, "Where did I get this? This videotape? Oh, I'll tell you where I got it. I got it from C-SPAN." Your Honor, the prosecution rests his case. But let's stop again and reflect on that. Trump's out there on camera in front of a microphone bragging about the size of the crowd at an attempted violent coup for which he is under multiple criminal investigations currently. This is like if during his trial, OJ was also doing ads for a leather apparel company with the slogan, "When I do a hit, I like to wear gloves that fit." It's like that. That is what it is like. So that's why it's crucial to investigate what happened on January 6th and hold the people responsible accountable. And that brings us to today's hearing, where the committee revealed new evidence, including Secret Service records, corroborating much of what we already knew, that Donald Trump was aware of the threat of violence at the Capitol and intentionally stoked it in an attempt to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden as president.
Since the committee ended their last hearing, the Department of Homeland Security turned over a mountain of new evidence, as you pointed out, over a million different documents. A lot of other emails, Microsoft Teams, and communications between Secret Service agents and other administration officials.
Wait, you're telling me the Secret Service and the Trump White House used Microsoft Teams? I am willing to bet everything I have that Donald Trump is one of those guys who accidentally mutes himself, except he talks so much he would never hear anyone else telling him to unmute. Mr. President, we have warnings from the Secret Service there will be violence on January 6th. Mr. President, you need to unmute yourself. Oh, God, no. Oh, I think he's talking about how windmills kill birds again. Oh, I don't want to watch it anymore. Let's just end this thing. Now, you might remember... You might remember from the last hearing, one of the many stunning revelations was about Trump's actions after his speech on January 6th, before the riot. Trump wanted to personally go to the Capitol to lead the insurrection himself. And according to sworn testimony from former Trump aide Cassidy Hutchinson, Trump even went so far as to assault a Secret Service officer and try to take command of his presidential vehicle to drive it to the insurrection himself. Now, a few days ago, Trump denied that story while also simultaneously insisting that if it was true, it would make him look cool.
If you listen to this one very sick individual, in order to get the Secret Service to take me to the Capitol, I grabbed one around the neck. And you know, I almost didn't want to dispute it because a lot of people said, "I never knew you were that physically tough." This guy was a tough guy that I supposedly grabbed. If I grabbed him around the neck, I think I would have been in serious trouble.
I mean, you are. You are in serious trouble. You're under, like, 19 different criminal investigations, and you just got subpoenaed. But I do know what he means. He means he would have physically been in serious trouble. Not that I think a Secret Service agent would ever body slam Trump. I mean, they definitely could. But they got to know he would sue the out of them. I mean, even if he was fine, you know Trump would start showing up to press conferences in a fake neck brace so he could take the Secret Service to court. "I apologize, but I'll only be taking questions from those of you in my direct line of sight, you know, due to the incident." Second, I don't think it would take much for a Secret Service agent to subdue Donald Trump. You probably only have to, like, hold his nose closed for 5 to 10 seconds. And because he won't stop talking, he passes out from lack of oxygen. "You messed with the wrong president, you son of a..." He's out. It'd be like that thing where your sugared-up nephew thinks it's funny to hit you, so you just hold his wrist and wait for your sister to look up from her phone and do some parenting for a change, Abby? But thanks to new communications revealed today by the committee, we now have proof that the Secret Service was communicating in real time about whether they could stop Trump from going to the Capitol to lead an armed mob as he attempted to violently overthrow the government.
One of the committee's newly obtained documents shows that sometime between 1:30 and 2 p.m., a senior Secret Service supervisor for protective operations emailed Trump security detail leader Bobby Engel with an urgent update and seeking to know if Trump's plan to go to the Capitol was successfully quashed. It came after a tumultuous hour for the Secret Service detail, which had effectively ignored a command from the president, which was to go down to the insurrection. Even with Trump back at the White House, Secret Service headquarters wanted to be sure the president was staying put.
That's right. The Secret Service ignored a command from the president to go to the Capitol to lead the armed mob. And then they communicated back and forth about whether Trump's plan had been successfully quashed. I really wish we could see all those specific text messages. Is POTUS back at the White House? No, he's currently fleeing motorcade on foot. Did you shoot him with trank dart? Yes. Made him sleepy, but also angrier. He is now stuck in tree. Did you activate emergency protocol Alpha? Is Alpha the one where we try to lure him down with a Big Mac? Affirmative. Yeah. So we activated emergency protocol Alpha. It made him sleepier, but also hungrier. He's now eating second Big Mac. The committee also made clear to point out that the evidence they provided so far has not been partisan. In fact, most of it has been provided by Republicans and people close to Donald Trump himself.
All this evidence come almost entirely from Republicans. The evidence that has emerged did not come from Democrats or opponents of Donald Trump. Instead, look at who's written and testified and produced evidence. Who has that been? Aides who've worked loyally for Donald Trump for years, Republican state officials and legislators, Republican electors, the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, political professionals who worked at the highest levels of the Trump campaign, Trump appointees who served in the most senior positions in the Justice Department, President Trump's staff and closest advisors in the White House, members of the President Trump's family.
That's right. Even Trump's own family provided damning testimony about the attempted coup. There were text messages from Don Jr. There was video testimony from Ivanka. There was even appearance from that ghost Trump befriended during an audition. An audition for the movie Smile, which neither of them got cast in because they're just not capable of smiling. The best Jared Kushner is capable of is making a pained sneer like he just smelled one of Trump's KFC farts. Committee Chairman Benny Thompson also mentioned that some of the testimony came from Trump allies who did not necessarily want to testify but ended up complying anyway.
And I want to be clear, not all these witnesses were thrilled to talk to us. Some put up quite a fight, but ultimately the vast majority cooperated with our investigation.
No, they put up a fight, all right. In fact, Rudy Giuliani even tried swinging a golf club at us, but he got tangled up in his super long khaki golf shorts, so we had to untangle him. But then he got his head stuck in the golf shorts, so we had to bring in the jaws of life to cut him out of the shorts. But then it turned out he had a second pair of even longer shorts under the first pair of shorts, so then at that point, we just let him go home. And then, in an especially attention-grabbing moment, the committee hinted at the possibility of holding some of the figures involved in the coup criminally accountable.
We've received new witness testimony, including about efforts to obstruct our investigation and conceal key facts. And according to public reporting, the Department of Justice has been very active in pursuing many of the issues identified in our prior hearings. Our committee may ultimately decide to make a series of criminal referrals to the Department of Justice.
You might end up making criminal referrals? What else has to happen to make a criminal referral? I mean, if only we had Donald Trump on video inciting a riot or, I don't know, bragging about the size of the violent crowd he whipped up to storm the Capitol and overthrow democracy. And if only we had a cunning, if amiable, Southern lawyer brave enough to show up to the hearing and present the court with the videotape. Shoemaker, send it to NBC. I think they're going to pick up Southern Lawyer. I also think one of the most notable revelations from the hearing today was the fact that Trump actually admitted privately to several of his aides that he knew he lost and decided to lie to his supporters and the country anyway in order to orchestrate his violent coup.
At times, President Trump acknowledged the reality of his loss. Although he publicly claimed that he had won the election, privately, he admitted that Joe Biden would take over as president. Here's a few examples of that.
So we're in the Oval and there's a discussion going on. And the president says, I think it could have been Pompeo, but he says words to the effect of, yeah, we lost, we need to let that issue go to the next guy, meaning President Biden.
I remember maybe a week after the election was called, I popped into the Oval just to like give the president the headlines and see how he was doing. And he was looking at the TV and he said, can you believe I lost to this effing guy?
Mark raised it with me on the 18th. And so following that conversation where the motorcade ride driving back to the White House, and I had said, like, does the president really think that he lost? And he said, you know, a lot of times he'll tell me that he lost, but he wants to keep fighting it. And he thinks that there might be enough to overturn the election, but, you know, he pretty much has acknowledged that he's lost.
That's right. Trump admitted multiple times in private that he had lost, and even said at one point to Biden, can you believe I lost to this guy? Trump being shocked that he lost is like your dad being shocked that the Motorola flip phone he still has gets service, you know? I can't hear a word you're saying. This thing sucks. Here, talk to your mother. I'll call you on my iPhone. Bye. So Trump knew he lost. He concocted an elaborate lie to save himself from embarrassment. In fact, he said as much when the Supreme Court rejected his last-ditch attempt to overturn the results. Private Secret Service messages and testimony from former Trump aide Cassidy Hutchinson revealed that Trump was embarrassed he lost and wanted to cover it up.
On December 11th, Trump's allies lost a lawsuit in the U.S. Supreme Court that he regarded as his last chance at success in the courts. A newly obtained Secret Service message from that day shows how angry President Trump was about the outcome. Quote, just FYI, POTUS is pissed. Breaking news, Supreme Court denied his lawsuit. He is livid now. Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, was present for that conversation and described it in this way.
The president's just raging about the decision and how it's wrong and why didn't we make more calls and just his typical anger outburst at this decision. And the president said, he had said something to the effect of, I don't want people to know we lost, Mark. This is embarrassing. Figure it out. We need to figure it out. I don't want people to know that we lost.
First of all, I like that even the Secret Service was saying, yikes, this dude is pissed. You think the Secret Service is completely silent with no personality whatsoever, but it turns out they're actually huge gossips.
Oh, my God. Did you hear Donald Trump totally chewed out Rudy at the meeting today? He also came up with a new nickname for Mike Pence. He called him Mike Penis.
So Trump knew he lost. He was just embarrassed. So he decided to concoct an elaborate lie about supposed fraud and orchestrate a violent scheme to overturn the results. You know, you'd think at this point Trump would be used to being embarrassed. This is a man who, let's not forget, once got on Air Force One with toilet paper stuck to his shoe and went outside looking like this. He looks like he heard a rumor that Democrats were hiding fake ballots in microwaves, so he stuck his head inside one to investigate.
No ballots in here. All I found is a frozen burrito. Where is the burrito? I regret to inform you, it is gone. I ate the burrito.
Today's hearing provided yet more evidence that Trump knew he lost and concocted an elaborate lie to stay in power. He orchestrated a violent coup. And if we don't hold him and his cronies accountable for this one, he's just going to do it again because, as today's hearings prove, Donald Trump is one
very sick individual.
This has been A Closer Look.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Our guest is a talented actress, comedian, and writer. You know from her work on Catastrophe and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. The season finale of her show Bad Sisters is streaming this Friday, October 14th on Apple TV+. Please welcome back to the show our friend Sharon Horgan, everybody. I am so happy to have you here in person.
I'm so happy to be here. I just met Pierce Brosnan.
Was it exciting for you?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, it was annoying at first because he looks younger than me.
Yeah.
But he's from Drogheda. He's from the same place in Ireland as me.
That's a really, must be a big deal, right?
It is a big deal. I mean, it's a bit of a one-horse town. You know? It's mainly famous for, well, it's got, in its main church in the city, it has the head of a saint, Oliver Plunkett, who was hung, drawn, and quartered.
Okay.
So I used to get taken to see this head when you were a youngster on a little school trip.
Do they? Is it in a glass
case?
It's
of course. Huh? Yeah.
What? I mean, no, of course. Hong Kong. We don't have our. We don't leave our heads out here.
We just love a bit of gore.
Yeah, you do love a bit of.
But it was lovely to meet him. He was like, "What the hell?" But I was like. I was like, I'm coming in.
Is it hard? Because obviously you've been incredibly successful. Is it hard, you know, that in your hometown they're like, well, you're not quite Pierce Brosnan, are you?
In my own family, yeah. You know, I'm number two. My brother is was an international rugby playing superstar. So, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Confidence is all.
You're not even the number one Horgan?
I'm not even number two, if I'm honest. My other brother's doing really well for himself. And so, but
do you think you could help us book one of them?
I would love that. You really like them.
So this is, I actually, since we're talking about your family, this is a show about five sisters who are incredibly close. I think the clip gives away to some degree that they're trying to figure out what to do about one of their brother-in-laws. But, you know, it's about a family. It's very close. Does your family watch it? How do your siblings feel about it?
They love it, actually.
They
hadn't seen any of it, so they're kind of watching it as it goes out. So I'm from a family of five. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why it was so much fun to write, just to put that, you know, that joyous thing of just being an instant tribe when you have a big family. But, yeah, they love it. They're really supportive.
This was a Belgian show that you adapted. How did you first become aware of it?
Well, I've been looking for a Belgian show to adapt for a long time. Finally.
Every day you call your agent, you're like, anything?
Anything Flemish? So, two American writers, Brett Baer and Dave Finkel, they had got the rights for it. And I was looking for something post-catastrophe. And I sort of, you know, I was tinkering around with a few ideas. And then the lady who's head of Apple in the UK, Jay Hunt, she said, I think I've got something for you. And I watched one episode and I was in. I mean, it's such a crazy premise. These sisters... One of them is married to a really odious, terrible, racist, sexist, misogynist, and also a prick. You know, just a really awful man.
Yeah, like you listed the first one, but also, putting his good qualities aside.
He's just a real prick.
Yeah, he's a real prick. Was it hard to write? It's one of the more... haunting pricks I've seen on television.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I mean, a lot of that is down to Clay Spang.
He's really spectacular.
Yeah, I love him. So I... he was our casting lady's idea, and he's a Danish, really good at playing pricks, and actor. And, but it was hard. It was hard to write just because we had to... there's an abusive domestic relationship at the heart of it, and... You want to, that's a lot of responsibility, you know, to tell a story like that and to make it truthful and show the, you know, the brutality of it. But at the same time, it's a comedy drama and he's a clown and a fool. And so it was hard, but fun and a lot of responsibility, but you know. I think we got it in the end.
Obviously you're an actor and you're a writer on it. You're also an EP. And sometimes when EPs have to make the kind of decisions that other people might not understand, the sort of day-to-day choices you make, including, you explain the photo real quick, and then we'll let you read your caption.
Oh.
What's going on there?
Okay, that's actually from the first day of filming.
Yeah.
And it's the opening scene of a show, and that's Clay Spang there in the coffin.
He'll be really happy this is the picture.
He will, because he looks great in flannel. And so when you, at the opening scene of a show, you have to, you know, you're trying to bring an audience in and you want them to feel confident that they've chosen the right show.
Yeah.
So, of course, I thought, give a corpse a boner.
Yeah.
And then people will feel like, okay, they've got this, you know. They know what they're
yeah.
doing.
Yeah, and you kind of wrote out a lot of the sort of decisions you were making. Too small and you can't see it. Too large and it just upstages the corpse.
Yeah. Also an issue, Slope needed to balance the wedding photo. It needed a sort of gradient because his widow panics when she sees that he has technical term postmortem priapism.
Yeah.
And so she has to cover it and she tries flowers first and then she uses their wedding photo. But and then it just keeps sort of just sliding off.
Yeah.
Just it was really
I will say I was watching it, I go, that's a really believable dead boner. I'm gonna stick with this show.
Thank you so much.
We've talked about your daughters in the past. The last time we Zoom interviewed, you were saying that how hard they are on you and how honest they are with their criticisms. I believe one of them told you your eyes are too close together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are, clearly. They are. That was only when she was really angry at me.
Okay, gotcha.
And I was shouting at her, and probably my eyes did look too close
together. Well, I will say, when you yell, they get a little...
They do narrow in. But, no, They're great. I've got an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old. The 18-year-old was, you know, I kind of rely on her a lot to tell me what she thinks of the shows I'm working on at the time because I feel like you need someone who can really sort of break your creative confidence.
Yeah.
at the beginning. So if I show when I show her stuff, I show her really early in the edit because her response is always, it's not going to stay like that, is it? And then you're like, no, why? What's wrong with it? And then my 14-year-old is just too much of a legend to watch anything.
Oh, yeah.
And if I ask her why she hasn't watched it, she goes, well, you know, you haven't got the login number for Apple TV or something like that. There's always like
she has an excuse.
Mother. Yeah.
It's never just I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, and then it's my fault because they're convinced that I don't know how to work the house. since I became a single parent, they just think I don't know how to make the house work.
So basically you can write, produce, and star in an Apple show, but you can't log into Apple on
the TV. Yeah. I mean that is true. But then I just send them a little review that I got from something.
Oh, that's nice.
And it makes no difference.
Isn't it really funny how needy we get with our kids?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I, honest to God, sent them one like 10 minutes before I came on. I saw this review and I just like sent it with a little sort of emoji. And they're like, good one, Mom. That's it. Yeah.
Well, it is a good one. It is always lovely to see you. Thanks so much for being here. You guys, that's Sharon Horgan. The season finale of Bad Sisters is streaming this Friday on Apple TV Plus.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, la, la. Where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.